Well, hello and welcome to the Smells Like Money podcast. Join me, Suzanne Chin Taylor, the doo-doo diva, as I interview guests who are making an impact on how we manage and operate systems for conveying and treating wastewater. As a veteran of the wastewater, trenchless, and civil infrastructure industry, each week I'll be bringing you industry know-how from industry pros who know how. Join me each week as I speak with representatives of organizations that are utilizing disruptive or new technologies and methods, and executives who are excited to share how to be successful and sustainable in our vital industry. So whether you want to learn about the latest trends in technology, in treatment or trenchless, gain tips on training and retaining great talent, or simply how to be more efficient, productive, or profitable, this podcast is for you. Ready? Let's dive right in. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Doo-Doo Divas Smells Like Money podcast. Today, I have the incredible pleasure of visiting with an old, longtime industry friend and maven. She calls herself the sewer granny, but I don't see her that way. She is a fellow WOW, which we know what that acronym stands for, a woman of wastewater. Marilyn Barron, who is the regional sales manager, and John Thompson, who is the director of business development with the Hill Company. And so I'm going to let both of them tell a little history about, you know, where they came from in the industry. It's kind of interesting. Our theme today is it takes two to tango, and more will be revealed as we get into the show. But Marilyn and John both have the distinct, I guess, experience in working in a trade show, as we would call it, working both sides of the aisle, not politically, but in that they have both been on the manufacturing side of our industry and are now both in the contracting side. So they are able to bring a unique perspective to what it's like to be in the trenchless field, coming from both sides of it. And so we're going to be talking about different perspectives and looking and exploring at the contractor to manufacturer relationship, the contractor to municipality, you know, end user asset owner relationship, and also looking at it going the other way, the manufacturer to the contractor relationship. And so with that, John, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about your history in the industry, and then a little bit about the Hill Company and what it does and who it serves.
Absolutely. And Suzanne, thank you for having Hill Services as well as Marilyn and myself on your program. Basically, I've been in manufacturing for most of my career until the point when I came to work for Hill Services on the services side. My career consisted of managing stores, developing sales territories, promoting and pioneering new products, as well as consulting with contractors to help them perform and apply the products in the correct manners to give the greatest longevity to the application for the end user. Through that, my career developed into different aspects and different segments, which led me to Hill Services, where I met Marilyn. And Marilyn and I have been working together for over the last 10 years.
Wow. Now, Miss Marilyn, you and I go way, way back.
Yes, we do.
Oh, gosh. I would say close to 20 years now, almost. At least 18 years we go back. And, you know, she has the distinction of winning the Golden Manhole Award, which is something that, you know, I aspire to myself. Don't know if I'm ever going to get there, but... Marilyn, tell us a little bit, for those of you who don't know her, tell us a little bit about your history in this industry.
Thanks, Suzanne. It's wonderful to be here, and I thank you on behalf of Hill and John for allowing us to spend this time with you. I was very excited, you know, that we were going to do this. As you say, we go back probably more than 20 years. And I go way back as one of the first women, right, first woman in the industry. in manhole rehab. And back then, you know, it was, they like keeping the women barefoot and pregnant and quiet and what have you. Thankfully, it's come away from that. I mean, we still have issues as women in the industry, but it's getting better. And there are more of us coming into the industry, thankfully. Yes. And it gives me pleasure to see all the young women who have chosen to come into the field. And yes, I have spent most of my adult life working on the manufacturer end. And then when John joined Hill Services, I was lucky. He called me and says, how about coming over and joining me at Hill? Now, the interesting thing is, I actually trained Hill to be a certified applicator for Epoxy Tech when I was with Epoxy Tech on the manufacturer's end. And I trained them 10 years ago to become a certified applicator. And I introduced John to Hill. And here we are, you know, and it's different. It's a different mindset being on the construction end versus the manufacturing end. You know, we have a relationship that's different as a contractor than the manufacturer. I mean, we're right there in the trenches. You know, and you've got to satisfy the end user, the person you're working, the municipality you're working with, or the industry that you're involved in as a contractor. But as I said, I've been in this a long time. I have one quick story that I think you will appreciate. Many years ago, I was at the old Pumper Cleaner Show, which is now WWETT, and which we will be at, by the way.
Great. So I'll see you in a few weeks.
And we, anyway, it was with a group of men from different construction companies and municipalities, and I'm the only woman in this group.
And I know that stand there,
and I make this statement, I've probably been in more manholes than you have. I turned every shade of pink and purple. I said, I don't believe I said that.
But that's, did I say that out loud?
But when I do any kind of technical presentation, that's my icebreaker. That's the story I tell. You know, it is what it is. And you, out of your mouth, you never know what's going to come sometimes. So that's my little story. And my license plate that I've had.
Oh, yes, yes.
For most of my life, which I can no longer have in Arizona, which does not thrill me, is Manholz. I had that plate for over 20, it's close to 30 years. I moved to Arizona. They said it was inappropriate. So I can't use that in Arizona.
Oh yes. As a fellow Arizonan, I understand. They need to get over themselves.
You would think in Pennsylvania with the Amish, that would be disturbing. No, no.
Nope.
But here in Arizona, because they're maintenance holes, is like in California.
Doesn't have the same ring on a license plate, certainly.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Well, on that vein, I remember riding in the car with you in Pennsylvania with that license plate, and the looks that we would get when we'd get up to a stoplight and whoever was behind us, and then they expected something completely different than what they got behind the wheel of the car when they were next to us. It never, you know, it was a good one.
I mean, I was going into Canada for a job. You're doing work, and the custom guy said, "What do you do?" And I I used to be stopped when I was putting gas in my car. Some guy would say to me, "Oh, so what does your husband do?" He thinks I'm in my husband's car.
Okay.
And I said, FYI, my husband's 6 feet under. I said, "So it's not my husband." He says, "Oh, it's you." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, what do you do?" I mean, I cannot tell you. You know, what do you do? And what they figured out what the license plate says. Or I'd be driving on the highway and get honked, and it's a contractor I've done work with because they know my license plate.
It's a conversation starter. That's how it has to open. Yeah, I love it.
Or a trade show, and they, "Oh, we knew you were here. We saw your car." Sometimes it's good, sometimes not so good.
But, so Marilyn is definitely a fixture in our industry. And so because of all your experience on the manufacturing side, and I want both of you to speak to this because you've both been on the manufacturing side, is that there are great careers to be had that it's, you know, if you've been in this industry for a while, there are opportunities. If you don't want to stay on the manufacturing side, you can transition over to the contracting side because you've got that unique knowledge. And because of that unique knowledge, now that you've come from that, I would like you to share your take on, you know, we talk about innovation. There's been a lot of upheaval in the industry, a big conglomerates coming in and buying up small manufacturing firms, you know, in our industry, whether you agree with that or you think it's a good thing or you think it's a bad thing. You know, I've mixed views on it because I think sometimes when big companies get involved, and having been the victim of a big takeover, and I will say victim because truly was a victim of a big takeover, that innovation gets stifled. And I see that there's going to be a renaissance of people that have, you know, decided, you know what, no, I'm going to go out and start my own thing. Or these big companies realize, wait a minute, I'm starting to lose. I bought this company because it was successful. I'm losing market share. How can I stay vital? How can I stay relevant in the industry? And so I think that they need to start listening, whether they're big, you know, big conglomerate, or they're medium sized, or they're a small family operation. They need to be listening to their customers more. And so now you're on that side being the customer. What do you see that manufacturers need to do to communicate better with their contractor customers, to help them, as you were saying, answer the needs of their customers? As I was saying, the theme of this was it takes two to tango. They want to be successful in selling product, but you want to be successful delivering a product. How do we have to communicate so we do a better job of that? And also the other thing is, if they're thinking about the next product that they want to roll out in the market, what do they need to be asking you, the end users, for R&D? And so I'm just going to leave that open to discussion. Whoever wants to jump on that one first, have at it. John, go ahead.
Marilyn or me? Marilyn?
Doesn't matter. Whoever wants to take
you,
that one
John.
First. It's a big loaded question.
I believe that it has to be a constant communication. Neither of the two industries can survive without that, without communication with the manufacturing reps and product development division. Products never change. They never meet the new challenges that are coming in the industry. They don't improve. They become more expensive and may not be able to achieve the expectation of the end user or the customer that the service provider is doing the work for. So I believe that it is a two-way communication that needs to be an open door so that we can both succeed. As a service provider, we have to be able to apply a product. We have a responsibility to apply the product correctly to what the manufacturer is instructing. And the manufacturer has a responsibility to provide us with innovative products that we can give the greatest longevity of the application for our end users. So in my opinion, it's not that the two segments or the two industries are really that different. They really need to work together in order to completely succeed. And innovation, that communication with the customers to understand where strengths are in products, where weaknesses are in products, where the costs are associated with certain types of applications. Without that communication from the service providers, the manufacturers are unable to service us the right way, to provide us the right information, to work with engineers, architects, and specifiers to correctly specify the right product for that application, rather than more of it being about selling that tangible product. We just want to sell, sell, sell. It needs to be a little more between the two of us. It can't be sell versus sell. It's got to be consultative selling, working together to toward a common goal of making the right application that meets the budgetary as well as the performance expectations of the end user, or I'm sorry, the owner, I should say. I apologize.
Great answer. Well, then, and Marilyn, I'd like you to take it going, you know, take your opinion on this, but something I want to address with you, because you have been, and I'm, you know, I remember having this conversation with you many times, is that how important it was for the manufacturers to have a great relationship with the consulting engineers, that they were absolutely critical to helping the installers open the doors. Also, you know, and opening that communication, because as you know, and I want you to address this, we are in a, whether we like it or not, we are in a virtual selling environment for that first pass of due diligence. And eventually you are going to have that face-to-face meeting. And so how do you begin to establish that trust, to have those lines of communication opening between, I would say, doing the dance with all of these different parties that are involved in order to get a project done successfully?
I have to tell you, the one thing I find and have always found so important and has helped me, as when I worked on the manufacturing end, I always felt it important when I went to do a lunch and learn or a technical presentation that I would bring the local applicator with me.
Okay.
Always did that. I thought it was so important that all the parties involved would meet, would talk, would get an idea on each other, and would know who was going to do the work. And nobody that I knew early on did that. To me, it was very important because there are questions that are always asked. And I always looked at myself as the educator, not the estimator.
Right.
I always use that because I'm not there to give you a price on what it's going to do to rehab a manhole or a lift station or what have you. That's not my job. My job as the manufacturer is to educate you on what we have to offer, a solution to your problem. I also ask that you bring perhaps your client to a lunch and learn. Invite, you know, the person you're looking to help so that everybody is on the same page.
Well, that leads me to that question when we talked before we were having you on the show about municipalities, you know, the shrinking budgets, shrinking labor force. They have infrastructures failing. They've got so much work that they have to do. And you brought up approaching it from, you know, bidding and specifying on a time and materials basis from the contractor side, that this may be a way to help cities combat, you know, like that you as the contractor are now coming in and maybe offering to do a little bit more of the heavy lifting for them that they used to do themselves. And so why don't you, you know, have you expand upon that, is that I love the idea behind that, because municipalities do need a lot of help right now. And how can contractors really help them fill that gap right now to get what they need to get done with all of the challenges that they're facing?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for the question. As a contractor working with municipalities, working with infrastructure on time and material, couple of things come to mind. First off, we have to be educated in what their needs are. Okay, we need to understand their needs as well as their budgetary concerns. Or budgetary limits. There are solutions that fall into separate financial categories. And that's also where the communication between the manufacturer and a service provider becomes important as well, because we may not be aware of innovative technologies or even maybe an old technology like convertible epoxy that would be more affordable in those type of applications. Secondly, we believe giving solutions that give greater long-term protection to the infrastructure, that reduces the price, the cost of the project by year because of the extension of the time frame that the lining or whatever process we are applying will last. So we want to have the right attitude as well as applicators. We've learned this from the manufacturing end, that when government money is involved, there is a tendency to waste it, to try to get as much of it, to over-specify products, to try to get more money out of the taxpayers. You have to have the right attitude and strategy as well, that you are here to help them. Certainly, we are not wanting to lose money, but on the flip side, we can contribute, give long-term protection to infrastructure through the systems we have, through communicating with the manufacturer reps of various coatings or lining companies to lift that heavy burden of multiple projects off of the municipalities back and give them the freedom to attend to more work that should be prioritized within their system.
That makes a lot of sense, because I think a lot of times when, you know, they're choosing a product or they're writing a bid, that they don't really, when they think about the cost, they often don't weigh in. So what is the total life cycle cost of this solution? They're looking at the immediate, the product, the material, the installation, the bid. But, you know, Marilyn, you and I know this, you know, you put in a product, okay, it's the cheapest thing. But 5 years from now, you're going to be back at the same problem. So it's either, do you pay me now or pay me later? And so I think it all does come back down to educating the public. And you were saying about, you know, the lunch and learn and not that much happening anymore. Now that we've moved into a virtual environment, do you see that companies need, since they're not doing a lot of this, that maybe we have to go about it a different way, by educating through content, educating electronically, using these things to stay in front of people, to educate them, to eventually, hopefully, get them to the on-site? But do you see that, I want to say, I've seen this happen, virtual lunch and learns are at least something that could be done in lieu of? Because as much as we don't want to admit it, there's the before COVID and there's the after COVID. We'd love to go back to the way it was before COVID, but it isn't ever going to happen. It's just not going to happen. People have seen, like we're here on this meeting today. Wow. Instead of maybe only getting one or two meetings a day, wow, I could get maybe 4, 5, you know, 6 meetings done in a day. So how do we, as contractors, and maybe even manufacturers, because they have to work in tandem with you on this, how do we shift gears effectively, knowing that the dynamics of the environment really have changed?
Sure. Well, I think that there have been so many avenues open due to the COVID situation that provide us with so many new platforms to educate, that those need to be utilized. I don't think it narrowed where we were before COVID and manufacturing and in service, doing lunch and learns for people in person, and it taking, you know, 3 hours, or in mine and Maryland's case, many times we were flying to other states to go and do this. The costs associated with it, the fact is that online and virtual is, in my opinion, the future. This is still an industry that it is face-to-face, it's hand-to-hand, yes. It's shaking, it's honesty, it's meeting in person. But in terms of education, just like you've seen universities change over the last 15 years from classroom to now everybody has a virtual classroom, that same type of method needs to be utilized in the education piece from both manufacturers and from service providers, so that engineers, owners, municipalities have a true understanding of not only what certain services can do, but what certain products from the manufacturer can do. And I say that from an example. We were recently looking at a project. There were 15 manufacturers listed on it. There was no consistency in product performance. You had on the same list for doing, let's just say, manholes in this application, you had a concrete, just a concrete to rehab, and that's it. You had epoxies, you had structural epoxies, you had CIPPs, you have, you know, just convertible old school epoxies. And you had all this variety on one specification, with almost every one of those segments having different characteristics, both short and long term, to meet the challenges of that particular system that we are lining or correcting. So the education piece, and I don't want to seem as if manufacturers aren't out there doing it. I'm sure they are. We're not getting invited to them anymore because we're not on the engineer side. But they need to, as we do, utilize as many platforms as possible so that the engineer, the end users, become more educated about what the customer needs. If a customer is looking for a 10-year warranty and a product that is not going to fail for 10 to 15 years, then specifying a technology like, you know, mortar or calcium aluminate, depending on the characteristics of that environment, is not going to last for what the customer's looking for. So we have to be, as applicators, very honest as well to level the expectations as to what products can do. In a bid situation like that, lowest bid is going to be the guy who uses the cheapest product. But that's not going to meet the expectations if they try to specify CIPP or epoxy tectonemic CPP or structural epoxy, or what those more long-term applications are designed for.
Well, that brings up a really good point in that we need to help the cities. Like when you were, you know, describing that bid, it's almost like they took a plate of spaghetti, threw it against the wall, and it's like whatever's going to stick is the thing we're going to use, but it may not be the ideal choice. To help these cities actually narrow down, to throw so many choices for solving a problem into one spec, I think they need to understand, maybe from the contractor side and also from the manufacturer side, whether you pick my company or my product, you're really doing yourself a disservice by making it so broad that you need to look at all of your options and then really narrow it down to those things that are actually, at the end of the day, not looking at, like we were talking earlier, total life cycle cost. It's like, what is it that you really want to have happen? What is the problem? What do you want the result to be? And then to help them, they probably just were throwing everything out there because it was the easiest way to write the spec, because they didn't want to do all their due diligence and your homework. How can we as contractors and or manufacturers help them to write the spec that is going to help them get the best possible solution for their product, to really narrow it down? And then you're only, it's not apples and oranges bidding on it. It's apples. It'll be the Red Delicious versus the Granny Smith. But at least they're getting closer to hitting the mark for what they need to solve that problem. And, you know, you brought that up. Is that I think that we need to make that effort to, It's not something we're getting paid for, but if we help them specify the right way, at the end of the day, everybody wins. They're going to get the right product, and then we've got a better chance at winning that bid. Or even if we don't win this time, maybe we're going to win it next time, because I see in this new virtual selling environment, it's all about trust. It's building the trust that eventually people do not do business with companies. They do not do business with a product. They do not do business with a brand. They do business with people. Do business with people. And I have to know when I'm bidding out a project, at the end of the day, I can lay my head down at night on the pillow and I can go to sleep and not have to worry that I'm not going to get a call 2 years from now with a catastrophic failure.
Correct. And that's what we tried to, that's what we tried to convey, you know, that effectively from a service, being a service provider, working with the manufacturer, we want to do things the right way. We want to provide the municipality, the end owner, the private sector owner with the greatest longevity and the right application. And I think that that is an important part for the contractor to keep in mind as well, is that not just going into a situation to sell, go in to consult. And our team, Maryland, obviously, Pennsylvania, and several markets, we have three other reps or four other reps in different markets across the country. And we are calling on engineering firms as a service provider to provide that education. So taking it that step further, not leaning and, you know, hat in hand, leaning toward the manufacturer and saying, you need to do this for us. But we're trying to help as well to educate about the right type of systems for the right applications. The fact of the matter is that everybody makes some great products. Everybody makes some inexpensive products, but you have to put those products in the right environments or they will fail. So that is what we are trying to do. That's what we do, is that with private sector and municipalities, we design systems around what they need. We sell them what they want to buy to a certain degree. We're not trying to upgrade them. We're not trying to put another system in. We're not trying to take advantage of their lack of education to increase our profitability. We're doing things with integrity the right way for the benefit of the contractor. I'm sorry, the end user. They're the owner. Success is our success, which is the success of the manufacturer as well.
Right, because, you know, if you do a great job with their product, it's a win-win all around. And so I'd like to close with just thank you for sharing that. It all comes down to open communication and constant communication. And I also think not assuming, is that it sounds to me like we need to have more open dialogue with, what is it that you really need? What's happening out there in the field? Not here, I'm going to create something, now go create a market for it, without asking you what is going on out there. What are the challenges that your end customers are dealing with? And it also comes down to about the product, the installation too, is that don't create a product that's so cumbersome or so difficult for the contractor to install that the labor or, you know, the training or whatnot, then that adds on cost prohibitive labor cost to installing that product. That there's got to be that communication of, let's make this easy for everybody at the end of the day and we all win. And so
absolutely, I would add continuous
Marilyn,
improvement.
Go ahead. Marilyn's got a good point there. I can see her chomping at the bit.
Go, Marilyn.
No, what I want to say is we want to give them the best return on their investment.
Yes.
ROI is so important. What are you giving the municipality? What are you giving the owner? What are they getting out of this? When do they look to have to redo this? Hopefully not in their lifetime.
Right.
You spend a little more on the front end, but you get so much more on the back end. You spend a little bit more. I also have seen that when you're working with a younger superintendent or a younger director. They want to keep their job. They want to stay there. So they, you know, look at saying, well, I'm going to choose product A because it gives me the best ROI. It gives me the best life. I know that 15, 20 years down the road, my manholes or my lift station is going to look as good as the day they were done. And yes, I'm going to spend a little bit more, but in the long run, I don't have to do this 3, 4, 5 years down the road when the prices have tripled for the construction. And
cost of labor
is huge.
Right. I have to ask this question, Marilyn, just because you've been in the industry so long and have met, you know, what I call the old war dogs. And now you were saying about this newer generation. Are you starting to see a shift in the industry with the younger people coming in that it is less about the cost and more about what you were saying, the ROI, the longevity, and not having to keep worrying about it over and over again? Do you see a dynamic shift in the way that people are seeing rehabilitation?
Again, it depends on who you're dealing with. It depends upon a younger person coming, a newbie to the industry, having gone to school and learned about it and do whatever. And cost, yes. I mean, you know, you want the most for little money. And some of the products, they're also finding out cheap is not always better. Just because it's less money, you get what you pay for. And I've always believed in that. You spend a little more, you get a heck of a lot more. And you don't have to worry that your manholes are going to just fall down around you because you need that better product. Now, not all projects need the same product.
Right.
You have to remember that as well. You know, you don't always need the structural epoxy. You can use a hybrid that's a little less money, does the same thing, but also has a lesser warranty. Warranties are huge as well. You know, and you have to make sure that you're working with a certified applicator and know what you're getting for your money. And know that, because I've seen where they've done work and 6 months later, they need to do it all over again. And that's not what you want. You want somebody who will come in, give you best ROI, will work with you, and do the job right the first time.
Right.
And apply the products.
Go ahead, John.
I would add, I think we are seeing that change. I think number one, it comes down to the company philosophy that they work with.
Mm-hmm.
Certain companies are more about from a manufacturer standpoint, more about the run and gun, get as many sales as possible. Some companies' strategy is more around specifying the right products for performance. I think with the different platforms, obviously with the different trade shows, and then you have NASCO and you have all the different organizations with AMP and old SSPC and NACE, we're seeing young people come out that are educated and entering the industry. So I think we are seeing that turn. When I started in this industry many years ago, pretty much if you could drive a car, you could be a sales rep and they would hire you and you run out. And that was pretty much, you ran all the time, just a call center on wheels. I think what you're seeing now is with all the education platforms out there, you're seeing a more developed newbie, as Marilyn put it, coming into our industry. And I think it, as ambassadors with age and obviously been in the industry for a while, that it is our responsibility to help teach and set the standards for what the industry needs rather than watch them fail or flail.
Wow. Well, on that note, I want to thank you both for coming on the show, sharing your experience and your insights on, you know, what is kind of a delicate topic, but it, you know, it needs to be discussed in order for the industry to grow, the industry to improve, and for us to take care of, you know, our infrastructure that we depend upon. And so for those who are interested in learning more about your firm and what you offer, how can they get in touch? Well, obviously you're both on LinkedIn, but how can they get in touch with the Hill Service Company? If you would give us that information.
Really, the easiest way is to simply go to our website, hillishere.com. Hillishere.com. And I say it that way because I left the I out many times myself. You can put an inquiry in there and it will be distributed to me and or the sales team, and we'll be in touch immediately. If there are questions about what further services we provide and other segments that Hill Services is involved in, certainly contact us. We'll be more than happy to explain what we do, where we do it, and we will customize a solution for any challenging application you may have for lighting.
Okay. Well, again, my thanks for coming on the show. Matt, John, great to meet you through this lovely connection with my old and dear friend. Marilyn, wonderful to see you as always. Look forward to connecting with you at the upcoming show. And for those of you tuning in, thanks for being here. And until next time, keep it flowing. Thanks so much for joining me, the Doo-Doo Diva, on this week's episode of Smells Like Money. What stood out to you this week? Share your takeaways by leaving me a review. You can find out more about the new technologies, creating sustainable solutions and insights on how to succeed in our vital industry by subscribing to the show. Whether you want to learn about the latest trends in wastewater infrastructure, treatment, or trenchless, you've got it all right here at Smells Like Money. If you're an industry expert and would like to be considered as a guest for the show, book a quick chat with me by visiting calendly.com/thetuitgroup/B-A-podcast-guest, or simply click the link in the show notes below. Until next week, a big shout out to all my industry friends and those who will be. You are my superheroes. Thanks for tuning in, keeping it flowing, and we'll see you all next week.